A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all listeners tuning in from around the world. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Reading News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. It's Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2025, and as we move further into the week, we continue doing what we do best, that is unpacking the stories that matter from governance to grassroots, from policy to the people. Now, On the Reader is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines behind the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. This isn't just another news show. On the Reader News Analysis is about depth and dialogue. It's where we interrogate the stories shaping our nation, asking the hard questions, revisiting past coverage, and connecting the dots through archived audio. From major policy decisions to the everyday realities of Namibians, we bring you the full story with context, clarity, and credibility. Remember, you can catch On the Reader live on all Eagle FM frequencies via the Eagle FM app or our interactive website. And don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes content. So stay tuned, stay curious, and stay a step forward as we get right into it. And getting into today's agenda, I'm joined in studio by my colleague Franz Sinengela. Very good afternoon to you, Franz, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Pleasure to have you, Franz. Kindly give us an update in regards to the Chinese embassy conference that was recently held.
Yeah, we are just coming from it now. It was just a second media briefing with the Chinese ambassador, talking about the bilateral relations between China and Namibia, and also focusing on some international, you know, relations and also challenges. The Chinese, you know, ambassador reiterated the commitment of the People's Republic of China to the development of Namibia in terms of aiding Namibia to achieve, or assisting Namibia to achieve their planned, you know, developmental goals. That is, of course, stipulated in the NDP-6 and the SWAPO manifesto, respectively. And at the same time, the ambassador took time to talk about the international events, geopolitical events, where he answered questions on various issues such as international geopolitics, the geopolitical tension that is taking place between, you know, the United States, China, and Russia, especially, where the ambassador reiterated their position, and, you know, to seeking diplomatic solutions rather than confrontation.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So currently, what exactly, was there any pointer to say where China is standing in terms of that relationship with them and the U.S., of course, saying that they don't want retaliation, right? They would rather sit down and find amicable solutions. Did they maybe highlight something out the possibility of what exactly they intend to do?
Yeah, no, the ambassador, you know, pointed to the fact that tomorrow there will be a meeting, a very high-level meeting between Xi Jinping, who is the president of the People's Republic of China, and the, you know, Donald Trump, who is the president of the United States of America. So they are meeting tomorrow in Seoul, that is, of course, the South Korean capital, to try to diffuse the economic tension, if you like, if it is going to be possible. So tomorrow we'll see the result of that meeting. If at all they are able to come up with, you know, a solution of some sort.
Sinengela, let's hear your opinion on that. Just if we're not hoping for that, but just if this meeting goes south or goes really sour, as we see China is not really willing or wanting to be pushed against the wall by the U.S., just then, how do you think the world at large, particularly us also in Africa, will be affected by this sour relationship between the U.S. and China?
Yeah, well, you see, if it goes sour, then that is really sad, because it's not only China that's going to be affected. It's mm-hmm. the United States too, because if they are going to impose tariffs, China also hits back, then it is going to be an economic problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, because China and the United States, are the world's major economies. So anything happens to them, I mean, between them, as far as sanctions are concerned,
yeah.
it affects any other person. Just like what is going on now, when the Americans have slapped, you know, Russia with sanctions targeting mm-hmm. two major oil companies, that is the Rosneft and the Lukoil. We've seen the rise of, you know, price in oil. That's, of course, the rise by 7%. It's not just going to bite the Russians. It's also going to bite the Western countries that have imposed sanctions, because inflation, you know, will rise, and the cost of living will start biting the citizens, the ordinary citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a negative impact on both both Russia and the United States. So the sanctions have two teeth. One tooth will bite the one that is sanctioned, but another tooth will bite the one that is sanctioning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is, because the world economy is interwoven.
Mm.
Yeah.
Quite interesting. And what do you see about China's stance with the U.S.? The fact that they are not willing to be pushed against the wall, opposed to, of course, other countries might be just going along and trying to peacefully negotiate, but China is also retaliating itself. What do you think about that? Is it right that maybe they should do that?
Themselves? They're an economic muscle too.
Yeah, yeah.
They have muscles.
Yeah.
So, and China cannot afford to be a pushover,
sure.
because otherwise the United States will benefit more than it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think China is in a position to show the United States that, you know, look, you are biting more than you can chew.
Yeah.
So you either limit your biting or you know, things goes haywire. But if it goes haywire, we know that, you know, America is not going to be spared by the consequences, because they also import things from China.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they also export to China. Mm-hmm. So they will also be slapped with tariffs. And that's not what the Americans would want at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they need to be, the Americans need to kind of like, you know, calm down a little bit. In as much as they are fighting for the Americans,
mm-hmm.
they also need to understand that, you know, there are consequences or there are limits to their power.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that they shouldn't be pushing over other countries, especially countries like China.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really wise for them to do that. In fact, because in a multipolar world, we know that the Americans are still a big name in terms of economic power.
Mm-hmm.
They're still the most prosperous country in the world. They're still the world's most powerful economy.
Yeah.
But that alone is not enough, because we are living in a multipolar world whereby the world economy is interwoven. So if you think, in fact, the sanctions are no longer the weapons, in as much as they still, you know, want to, you know, they still want the world to view it so.
Mm-hmm.
But they are proving to be more ineffective than, you know, they are expected.
Mm. I hear you. Francine Engela, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And then we headed up from Francine Engela. Just we pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. But stay tuned. We're just getting started. This is on the Reading News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%,
important is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili inawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali hea di nola natu.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
FM, onore tatuimwe, bali heali, nola natu, heali, bali, no heali, ineko.
Welcome back. Now in other news, the Inspector of Education for the Nkuni Circuit has called on all schools in the Kavango West region with access to water to start school gardens, emphasizing the importance of introducing agricultural education and practical food production skills from a very young age. Now the call comes at a time when Namibia, like many other nations, continues to grapple with challenges of food insecurity, climate change, and economic dependency on imported produce. Now, according to the World Food Programme, a WFP, around 1 in 4 Namibians experience some level of food insecurity. A reminder that food sustainability must begin not just at policy level, but at grassroots level. Now, school gardens serve as living classrooms where learners not only study plant growth, nutrition and environmental science, but also develop an appreciation for sustainable living and self-reliance. Now, these gardens can teach critical skills such as irrigation, composition, crop rotation and water conservation, especially vital for regions like Kavango West, which has both the agricultural potential and the young population to drive change. Of course, joining me in studio now is Josiah Shipinkana, who is an horticulturist. A very good afternoon to you, Josiah Shipinkana, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon, and afternoon to the Galician listener and the entire management.
Mm. Josiah, it's indeed a pleasure to have you at this point in time, considering that the Inspector of Education in Kunkuni Circuit, that is Kavango West region, has called on Kavango West schools, to those with water, of course, and access to water, to emphasize the importance of introducing agricultural education and practical, and I emphasize on that, practical food production skills from a very young age. Just what is your take on this, Josiah?
That's a very good news, not only that it has been said before and now, but it would be more good if we are more of implementing than more of talking and not implementing, because then we need to understand, and it has been according from left, right, center to say, the education in terms of the grassroots and within the agricultural sector has been talking of the grassroots. But there was a question of how that's going to be done. And that should not be left to the center of the education, the community where the school is. It's actually a national issue that all the stakeholders need to participate with that regard. And at the end of the day, we can then talk about the grassroots. At the end of the day, we can then talk of social economic. At the end of the day, we can then talk of job creation. We can then talk of balanced diet, malnutrition and hunger, and so on, to name a few.
Mm.
But enable us to achieve this. I've been always, this is how I perceive, I've been always calling the collaboration from the community, from the education sector, from government and the private sector. I remember, and I quote, recently when the president was addressing the private sector, and she said, one day we might end up becoming better while we got resources at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these resources, not only resources,
yeah,
it's the resources that we have, but what have we done with the resources that were entitled and managed directly by us? Have we done anything?
Yeah.
So that's another question.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can answer that question in that way, then we'll be able to achieve what we call tangible results and enabling us to have activity that are going to speak quite positively and enough towards social economic job creation as I alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the skill transformation, at a grassroots, is very important, because then our people need to have what we call a know-how. Because you can pump in money, you can inject in money, or at the end of the day, you've got resources that are going to put at waste because people are not well capacitated. So here we are talking with the grassroots,
yeah,
including also capacity building at a very area stage, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Then we know these people are also going to expose to the fullest system where they are going to touch things like this is compost, this is how maize,
mm,
they are now lacking nutrient A, and if they lack nutrient A, this is what they are going to do, and things like that. Because you learn by seeing, and this is what we call tangible. And, mm, and if we are not going to do that, then we're going to cycle. And that is not a good news.
Yeah. Shivengana, I like how you always emphasize towards food security, and of course us getting practical, not just doing the talking, but really getting our hands dirty when we're talking about food security. But I want you to get to that point where you talk to us about really in terms of getting the learners to learn about agriculture from early on. Are we just talking about learners who are studying agriculture in schools, or those who are, you know, or are we talking about all the learners here? Because from my perspective, I think that we should perhaps incorporate all the learners it can be sort of like an extramural activity, because at the end of the day, when theory doesn't work out for that particular child who is studying science, or perhaps who is studying accounting and economics, maybe, you know, they never know, because nobody actually was testing them in that aspect. You never know that maybe actually they could start their own garden tomorrow, which would really be beneficial to them and perhaps also to the community where they are in. What's your take on that?
The answer is very simple. It's up to us as Namibians, by Namibians.
Yeah.
So if we want diving, so we have to come up with mechanisms, strategies and ways and tactics that are going really to speak to the need, by knowing exactly what do we need at the end of the day for us to achieve certain aims and objectives. More especially, we have to now be specific within the agricultural sector, but the agricultural sector can be broad, because at the end of the day, that's why,
mm-hmm,
when it comes to higher rate of unemployment in Namibia,
mm,
it's not because only that there is no job, but it's because the system is intact, and our people are meant more to be absorbed than be creating.
Mm.
But is it the system? No, it's not the system. It's the people, or it's us who are implementing the system. If the system has been put in place by us and it's not working, the little things I have, then it must be revived. Or we have to put in what we call a collective action, without changing the entire plan, but to see,
mm,
where are we going wrong, how are we going wrong, and then we start adjusting without changing the entire plan. The plan will remain the same, but it must be adjusted. Something that is not working, it must be revised.
Yeah.
So, now, when you have, let's be specific. Currently, I'm making reflection on high employment rate among the education sector again.
Mm-hmm.
We have got a lot of qualified teachers that are sitting at home. But these people are going to interview on daily basis.
Yeah.
Of which some they can travel to regions and very far places. Where are they getting money? They are getting money from you who is working for Eagle FM. I'm sorry for that. Just an example.
Okay.
But the way where I must now dive into your question deeply, it will say, if it's working within the agriculture sector, whereby you can have a backyard garden,
mm-hmm.
maybe in terms of resources, because remember, we have got capital that are needed to enable for you to have something bigger than that. And you start small before you got to the top of the ladder.
Okay.
So then, of course, you have got a backyard garden, which is speaking to the household needs. But at the same time, should you have a surplus, whereby you are producing quality and the quantitative
mm-hmm.
product,
mm-hmm.
including now value chain, including now value addition, and all these other things, agri-processing. So at the end of the day, I came across to somebody who have done a certain course, but they are not employed in that sector. They make a U-10. And I say, what makes you to make a U-10? They say, yes, sir, money is in the ground. Then I keep on asking, how in the ground? No, when you dig in the ground, you put your seed and you produce quality. Then you start selling, you start supplying, you do what? Because we only want to produce, but sometimes we forget about the quality and the quantity at the same time.
Yeah.
Even when you want to talk about value addition, agri-processing, what are you going to process?
Mm.
And then we forget also about capacity building, enable to transfer skill, enable people to be equipped, to be enhanced in terms of a know-how. Then people are knowledgeable. And then we move on very positively as a nation. And it's not about government alone. Government got department, government gets stakeholders. But at the end of the day, the citizens of this nation are the government.
Yeah.
And the government is relying on us. We can adjust anything, but if it's not working, or we can put in a call to say, if something is not working, let's. Because also, the other time I was talking about indigenous knowledge. The power of indigenous knowledge to be collaborated with those with academic. And by so doing, then you have got to the academic side, which is meant to go and uplift, which is meant to go and improve the living standard, the livelihood of people on the ground. But yet you have these people that are coming on the ground without knowing. And this is where we are saying, if it's not working, I'm referring back again to the grassroots. The grassroots,
mm-hmm.
you cannot expect to produce somebody who is not going to be productive, and yet we are talking about the grassroots. Something must be done. Then something must be wrong. And that person has been enlightened to come or to go and to change the livelihood, the living standard, the lifestyle of individuals, the same skilled, and many other. It's a combination, including the illiterate ones. Eh? Sorry for the word. But it is the truth. But this person also, when they are on the ground, they are more of less implementing and looking again to the community. We understand. But when we have got the grassroots, which is well managed, I can assure you that not even 5 years, in 2 years' time, we're going to have a better Namibian in terms of malnutrition. We'll be having a better Africanism that we are talking up to the world, whereby then malnutrition and hunger, and the United Nations have put in already components that are going to guide us on how we are going to produce food. They are there, very clearly. Stability, utilization, accessibility, and availability. Now, when you talk of availability, food cannot be available without you being producing it. Utilization, food you cannot know how to use that food and able to speak to your balance that on a daily basis as the doctor prescribes if you are not producing it.
Mm-hmm. Shibingana, you have trained, of course, as a horticulture, you have trained others in terms of horticulture. I take it you have also trained school-going children. Just how are children perhaps able to grasp this concept of producing food at home and backyard gardens? How do they do compared to adults?
That's what I'm saying. My answer is always simple and short. That's what I'm saying. It's up to us. If the education can consider us on the ground with a little know-how that we have, and then we collaborate with the academic, then we'll be able to achieve that, because then they brought them to us, they see things. Because I was even in a school, in one of the private schools in Osakati, because I put a request already in schools where I say, what is the way forward? You cannot tell me, Mr. Principal, the grassroots. I went to schools. I don't want this a topic for another day, but I'm just making a difference.
Okay.
But the person is telling you grassroots, and yet the school does not even have a little plant. Being vegetable, being an orchard or and so on. They'll tell you water. But have you heard how many schools have been closed due to the impact of flood? And the water keep on going until it, you know, it disappear. Why are we not doing catchment area? If that is the case, there's a lot to talk about, but we are more of talking than implementation. Now, the problem is that the academic recognize those who are within the academic and forget the power of indigenous knowledge. People who are already on the ground.
Yeah.
And if my thing is very simple, maybe I am the one who is saying it. I'm not an anti-academic. But I'm saying, why can't we collaborate? And that's to answer your question, to say the kid can then benefit, because you'll be having a school tower moving in my garden, moving in somebody else's garden, then they're exposed. Then we have got also what we call internship. That's what we call internship. Let them come. It's not that we got nothing. It's not that they got nothing. But we need to collaborate.
Absolutely. I hear you. Shibingana, your final words on this interesting topic?
Yeah, my final word is that the news is very pleasing. My calling to any Namibian who is listening or who see this news is very important or vital to the nation. There is no other way of improving or of changing or contributing toward development for a Namibian child by a Namibian person. So time is now or never. Let's dive in. Let's work hard wherever you are, more especially in terms of agriculture, because I can tell you what, all the products, mostly being your clothes, being what? Food, every day when you are going to work or wherever, they are coming from agriculture. So, and if that is the case, I want us to have even a conference or whatever, even when the president was addressing private sectors, but there will be no food. So that then we understand. You understand what I mean? There shouldn't be no food. So that we understand the importance of this. But all I'm saying is that let's work together. Let's be more of implementing than of talking. Let's work together. That's it. That's my calling.
Yes. I hear you, Shibingana. Thank you so much for making time for us right here.
Always.
Okay. And there you had it from Josiah Shibingana, who is an horticulturist. And of course, now we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We're still on this very conversation. We'll be back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And of course, we are back. We're talking about school children being trained, practically being trained also to know in terms of agriculture, horticulture, agronomist. But now we are joined in studio by an agronomist that is telephonically Jacob Mutota. Jacob, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Jacob, as an agronomist and a farmer who sustains his livelihood from farming, what is your take on this news at hand today in terms of training them up while early, that is in schools, and not just in Kavango West region as the Inspector General, and the Inspector of Education that side is advocating or calling for, but all throughout Namibia's schools? What is your take on this?
Well, it's a very nice topic to discuss, and I'm so happy for the Inspector of Education in the Kavango region, the Kavango West region rather. So just commenting on such a very important issue. We are sitting with a lot of students, learners, or even some of them that even went to university and they are currently working somewhere. They have no idea how food is produced, and that's, our countries are being left behind when it comes to food security, and we will always be insecure if we don't engage our young ones into this kind of thing. And this happens, and it brings the consequences to when now everything is growing, when now kids are growing. We have kids that are going out to study agriculture just because it's something that is available, but not something they want to do or something they see benefit of. So giving them an early training will really help to secure food in the country or in the whole nation.
What are those practical things that you will advise? Should the ministry also now be thinking about, you know what, maybe let's train all the learners. Let's make it available in all the schools. And some of them can be, it can be on the side, sort of like an extramural activity. What practical steps or involvements would you say then perhaps teachers and principals will need to begin with firsthand?
Okay, now first of all, the teachers and the principals of schools have to establish small gardens at school. They have to keep a few chickens at school, because those are the smaller things that you can practically do on a smaller space. Some of the schools don't have that quite large space to keep sheep and goats whatsoever, but for as long as they have gardens around, it will help. And another thing that has to be done is the whole ministry has to introduce agriculture subject as a compulsory subject, just like languages, for all the grades. At least from grade 1, kids must already be involved in agriculture training until the secondary grade. This will now enable them to understand and know how to handle this food production and others. And it's not only food production that they will benefit from. Also, if they elevate to higher grades, they should also be taught that food production can also be food. You can also have at least a business from farming, or you can have other business from what you have been doing from LA. There is a say that says a school that has English as a compulsory subject, no, like a nation, will have people that are fluent in English, but they are starving.
Exactly.
Yeah. We will have fluent English speakers, but we don't have food. So I think agriculture should be made compulsory in all grades, just to equip learners from the early age. And if you are to take examples from Asian countries, they produce a lot of things that come here, toys and all those things. Meaning kids at an early age is kindergarten. They are already practicing those manufacturing things. They are already dealing with what is it, robotics and all those. Why can't we train ours to do with agriculture at an early age so that we can have a lot of people that are well know, that are well trained in food production, and then they add value to our food production and the whole food chain.
I like that. That we should make it compulsory for all learners. I completely agree. A lot of people has, of course, have gotten the basics of theory, have even gone up to, obtain degrees, and still they can't produce something for themselves. Imagine, I might not be working, but I have a backyard garden at home that produces tomatoes, spinach, and who knows, I'll be moving to potatoes and all that kind of stuff. At least then I have the basics of what can sustain, perhaps not fully, but then at least I have something. You understand? It also gives me some sort of confidence, to be able to wake up every morning to go in, sort out my backyard garden. So I really agree with you there, Jacob Mutota, to say, I think education, agricultural education should be made compulsory for learners. You know, I even question at this point in time, you know, when my kids go to school and there's not really something really tangible practically that they are doing, just a lot of theory. And I'm a very firm advocate of, as much as we are getting taught theoretically, let's also do something practically, something to be able to fall back on. I mean, recently we do having conversations about TVET, you know, and not just looking at varsities to get trained theoretically. Yeah.
Yes. No, it's, were you saying something?
No.
Okay. No, it's really a good thing if all the schools will take part into this. I know there are still some school teachers, school principals that don't understand.
Yeah.
That also discourage learners from doing agriculture and all those. But this, as we move forward, the world is looking into food production. We should be self-sustainable when it comes to food production, so we can stand on our own. Because right now, if South Africa says we will cross our borders, we will not export Namibia anymore, we will stand with empty shelves because we have no one to produce. We don't have enough.
Yeah, no one to fill in that gap.
Not because, yes, this is not because people can't. It's because people don't have know-how. They don't understand the benefits of food producing or food production in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of those that are doing production, like subsistence farmers, they only produce enough for
the household.
For the household and consumption. So we have to diversify also, make kids and learners understand that not only that you will produce food for yourself or for the family or whatever, but you can also make a living from farming.
That's true. That's
yeah.
Very true.
And to give one example also, there is a school where my son goes to, and I asked, what do they do agriculture? Then they said, no, they will introduce agriculture from grade 4. And I mentioned, if my son enters grade 4 and is not agriculture, then I will be left with no options but to change. Because I want someone to grow up knowing where eggs are coming from, not Shoprite, not Pick and Pay, not Chase or stores. Because most of the kids, if you ask them, where do we get eggs from?
From Shoprite.
Where do we get burgers from? They will only mention stores in the restaurant, but they don't know everything comes from the ground, everything comes from agriculture.
Yeah.
So you are not moving forward as a nation if you don't educate your young one of all this.
I completely agree with what you're saying. And I think for subsistence farmers back in the past, then, you know, when their kids and their grandchildren will be there at the farm, they learn practically from farm work, you see, even when they go to school. And then you see, actually, at some of the very good farmers, successful farmers, when you look into their history, into the line, you see where the person got the practical know-how from a very early onset. Maybe this is enough also to teach us that, you know what, maybe let's introduce it now in schools, because not everybody now has a farm at home where they can learn and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you also look at the most powerful people in farming, they have inherited farms from maybe they are now operating as third generation, meaning those kids grew up on the farm, they learned and they were sent to school just for sharpening up to come back and manage those swamps. And most of the swamps are very successful.
True.
Yes,
true.
They are very successful. So it's very interesting to hear this coming from an educator.
Yeah, I hear.
Because most of them, they only look at education, nursing, engineering as the courses or to give to kids. And they never encourage kids to look into farming, agriculture, or anything that is related to food production.
Okay, that's true. Jacob Mututa, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. We appreciate your insights with us.
All right, thank you so much for having me. If you have another topic to discuss, I'm always available.
Sure, thank you, Jacob.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I think we haven't really paid homage or gratitude to the inspector. That is Inspector Nicodemus Chakuta, the Inspector of Education for the Nusi Circuit, that is Kabango West Region. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 1-2-000 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association will host its elective annual general meeting on Wednesday, the 5th of November 2025 at 17:30? The meeting will be held virtually, allowing alumni to join from all corners of the world. All UNAM alumni are invited to be part of this important occasion as we reflect on achievements, discuss key motions, and elect a new executive committee. A GM link will be shared closer to the date and all reports will be available on the UNAM website. Don't miss this opportunity to connect and shape the alumni legacy.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi kenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Namibia has paid back its euro bonds of 13.5 billion Namibian dollars today. Let's now take a listen to Minister of Finance, Erica Shafuda.
So please bear with me. It is with this reason that with pride and purpose, I stand before you to announce the successful redemption of Namibia's second euro bond. This redemption, valued at $750 million, represents the largest single debt maturity in our nation's history. It is a testament to our unwavering commitment to fiscal discipline, strategic foresight, and prudent debt management. As you might recall, Namibia issued its first Eurobond in 2011, and that was for $500 million, approximately 7.5 billion Namibian dollars, and that was secured at an interest rate of 5.5%. Sometimes people ask, yes, you went and you got all this money, where did you spend it on? We are very transparent. And for that, I want to indicate that the funds from the first Eurobond, among other sectors, It was indeed allocated to support strategic initiatives, including the housing sector. But you can still ask and we'll give you more information. That bond was successfully redeemed in November 2021. In 2015, Namibia then entered again the international market or capital markets. And then we issued, or the issuance was then $750 million, like I have already indicated, at a coupon of 5.25%, slightly lower than the one of 2015. And this is the one that we are going to redeem today. Some people say, why are you saying redeem? What is that redeem, redeem, redeem? Okay, we are going to explain later. We are going to pay back that what we owed since 2015. Engaging with the international capital markets serves as a testament to Namibia's readiness to navigate its own future, reinforcing our confidence as a nation dedicated to sustainable progress. This initiative also underscores the trust that is placed by investors and all of us in our governance, our institutions, and our collective vision for fostering inclusive development. It is very, very significant that we talk about the Eurobond. The Eurobond enabled us to bridge critical financing gaps, support our national budget, like the governor already indicated the purpose of the Eurobond. It was also to support our national budget, enhance our reserve levels, and stimulate economic growth during the period of global financial uncertainties. This strategic move was not aligned or was not taken lightly. It was a deliberate decision by the government to secure a long-term financing, like I have said, to address developmental needs of our country. The proceeds from the Eurobond were channeled into transformative projects that have left a lasting impact in our economy and our people. This one, I think you will all agree with me, and I do not need to enumerate the projects that were financed through the proceeds of this Eurobond. But I have to announce, because that's why you are here. You want me to tell you, where did we spend the money? We spend this money, the nation can hear. We spend this money in expanding road networks. Who has not seen the roads of Namibia? Give me a round of applause in behalf of the government. The energy infrastructure, we equally invested in education and healthcare, and it has really helped us to lay the foundation for a more connected, productive, and equitable Namibia. Moreover, the Eurobond played a pivotal role in stabilizing our macroeconomic environment. It provided the fiscal space needed to respond to external shocks, including commodity price volatility and regional droughts. In terms of its strategy and domestic market development, the government implemented the Sovereign Debt Management Strategy of 2005, alongside with the Namibian Financial Sector Strategy that covered the period 2011 to 2021. These two strategic frameworks recommended that approximately 80% of the government's funding requirements be raised from the domestic capital market, with a target then of 20% to be coming from the international markets. Namibia has taken a strategic approach to developing financing by emphasizing the importance of sourcing funds from domestic markets. This initiative serves as a foundation for building a more resilient, competitive, and dynamic financial system. By adhering to best practices, we aim not only to support economic growth, but also to enhance the capabilities of our domestic financial institutions. It is our hope that these institutions will evolve into innovative, technology-driven institutions well-positioned to navigate the complexities of globalization. I'm addressing you because I have not become a politician, so bear with me because I will take long. The redemption of our Eurobond was not only anticipated. It was really well planned to follow the above principles. Through prudent physical management, we established a singing fund that was hosted by our responsible Central Bank of Namibia. And this singing fund accumulated then the necessary resources to meet our obligations without compromising service delivery or macroeconomic stability. Through this mechanism, we mobilized $444 million, demonstrating our resolve to meet our financial obligations. Then you will say, what happened to the gap? Because I mentioned already 750. Now I'm telling you that at the sinking fund, or within the sinking fund, we had $444 million. Now you are asking me, what about the $306 million? I'm going to tell you now how we mobilized the $306 million. So the remaining gap of the amount that I have mentioned, the $306 million, we had a plan. And remember, we said with our domestic, with our sovereign debt management strategy, and here the other strategy that's talking into financial markets, we then issued a request for proposal to local commercial banks, to all commercial banks. I'm pleased to announce that the response was robust and competitive. Let me share with you the results of that competitive process. The following institutions were awarded, right, as follows. Standard Bank, $3 billion. FNB, $1.5 billion. Bank Windhoek, in partnership with ABSA, $1.5 billion. I also needed to give you homework because I quoted a gap in New York.
Joining me in studio now is my colleague David Shombe to discuss further on this. Very good afternoon to you, David Shombe, a known person who breaks down business economic segments.
Yeah.
So yeah, good afternoon, Shombe. Welcome to On the Radar.
Afternoon, Juju, and afternoon to your listeners. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah.
Kindly break down for us what the minister is saying. For those sitting at home and wondering, wait, Euro bonds, 13 billion Namibian dollars. What is that?
Yeah, in simple terms, it means that the government borrowed money from international investors.
Mm-hmm.
That is $750 million.
Yeah.
And given a term of 10 years to pay it. And today was the final day of repayment. In fact, Namibia have paid today $750 million. And when you put it in Namibian dollars, it's got to 13 billion.
13.6.
Yeah. And in that aspect, you may also want to look at what the minister has said.
13.5.
Yeah, what the minister has said, especially in his speech, to say Namibia is adhering to strategic debt management. But the question you may also want to ask is to say, this is a lot of money and was paid within, a given time. What is the impact of that? Have an ordinary person felt the impact of that money? To human development, to say, what was that money used? Now, I also asked a question to say, I wanted the traceability of that fund, to that extent that, when you are dealing with, developmental issue, you'll be able to say you invested in this. But what it is that, the money have been, invested in the whole budget pool. Then it has to be used for developmental, projects such as education, and road infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody may also want to ask a question to say, have your investment paid off? Because you invest, for example, in education. Yeah. But have your investment paid off? You invest in quality education.
Yeah.
But where are your graduates? Who is contributing to expansion of your economy?
Mm.
And you may also be able to look at, something that people do not, also look at is that there's not actually a big gap between the first Eurobond, which was issued, which was paid in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and also the other one also, which was borrowed in 2015. Then I have also asked questions to say, when are we going to, you know, to borrow another. In simple terms, there is this weight of redemption, redeeming, but in simple terms, you just got a loan and you are paying it back with interest. That is a simple thing. But the question is that what you have borrowed, have it really impacted your people? That was the main conversation. And today, I think the government is also taking a shift. And I think looking at the strategy of the Ministry of Finance and also BON is to say, I think it's not quite important anymore to look for money from outside, but you have domestic investors, because if you have money, then you borrow government money. When they are paying it back, it contributes to financial secretion and also saving the people within the country. Because, Juju, if you talk about 750, million US dollars, they are not going to fit here if you put it in Namibian dollars.
But that is
a conversation also. But yeah.
Let's pause here now, and then we'll be back after the scheduled commercial break. Okay. David Chambe.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Get the best for less at USave. 2 kilograms Omaeta cultured milk, just $48.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Rietfontein nectar juice, just $34.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of King Poloni, just $24.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr packet soup, $30 Namibian for any 5. That's just $6 Namibian each. Take a break with Nestle Kit Kat chocolates, just $10.99 Namibian dollars. And a 2 liter Koe cool drink, only $12.99 Namibian dollars. USave, your low budget grocery store. Where good food costs less.
And we are back. I'm still in studio with David Chambe. David, you were posing some very interesting questions today in regards to this Eurobond. One of them, which I'm very fascinated about, is have you got some retains with this investment? But you're saying something further as well before we...
Because Juju, when you are borrowing money and you are investing money for the future, you must also track your progress. That's why we are looking for the aspect of progress tracing to say, what have I done with this money? Did it bring me some changes? Or I have just... because when you are paying back with interest also. Of course, you are paying back with interest.
Yeah.
But the question is that, did that money help you? And have you improved the situation of the Namibian people on the ground? Have you improved the inequality? Have you improved the quality of education? The education, we got education, but is that education of high quality? And also, when are we going to borrow? Don't be surprised, and I don't want it to happen actually, to say after 2 years or maybe a few months, we are already going to borrow another money. Then you do not, then there's no difference between you and somebody who owe money to a micro lender. Because you must also be responsible to say, okay, we got this amount of money.
Yeah.
Then we can get also a way on how to maintain ourselves, to say we invest in critical infrastructure that can also be able to generate money for ourselves. But looking at the BON and the Namibian economy, something that you need to understand that we have a very smart central bank.
Yeah.
We just need to make sure that whatever money comes in, those who are responsible for distribution to key infrastructure must save the people on the ground. Because somebody who is at the village in Okongo, when you speak about this Eurobond, have he or she felt that? I don't think so. They just money come in, money left with interest.
Yeah.
But that is what is it for. From me, especially to this aspect.
Interesting, David Chambe. I think we can continue this conversation on business economic segment. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, it's quite important to expand it with experts. Yeah.
Okay. David Chambe, with that being said, let's just appreciate you. And of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with what's happening in terms of economic indicators. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now it's at this juncture that we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators, and thereafter, of course, not shortly after, we'll be telling you what's happening in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. So let's talk about the economic indicators. Now, $1 today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 28 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 12 cents. One dinar is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 70 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 68 cents. And one Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. Now we're moving over to trading economics. The total value of outstanding loans in Brazil rose 1.1% month on month over month to 68.8 trillion in September 2025. That is the most since December, following a 0.5 increase in August. Now, corporate credit increased 1.7% to 2.6 trillion, while household lending grew 0.7% to 4.3 trillion. Now, on an annual basis, overall credit expansion slowed to 10.1% from 10.4% in August. Portugal's unemployment rate edged up to 6.0% in September 2025, following a downward revision to 5.9% in August, after reaching a five-year low of 5.8% in July. Now, the total number of unemployed increased by 4,300 to 337,200, while employment grew by 9.4,000, reaching a new all-time high of 5.287 million. Both the employment rate and labor force participation rate hit record levels of 65.7% and 69.9% respectively. The Swiss Investor Sentiment Index rose 38.7 points month on month to -7.7 in October 2025, that is according to UBS. This is one of the largest increases in the history of the indicator, next to surge observed in the aftermath of the great financial crisis during the COVID pandemic. Now, despite the recovery, sentiment remains dampened by the US imposing 39% tariffs on Swiss exports in August, as the US takes about 17% of Switzerland's total exports, making it the country's largest export market. Meanwhile, the current conditions index remained neutral at 0, down from 3.6 in the previous month, reflecting subdued sentiments on the present economic situation. Now, that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators. We pause here now, then we'll tell you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. See you right after.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukorile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angetashia kengeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fada Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Onora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Now, crime intelligence.
Ikuranenge no wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumona ui.
And our fingers beyond the border, South Namibia, we're starting off in South Africa where cocaine worth 20 million rand was seized in Midrand, South Africa.
Driven operation has resulted in the discovery of 20 million rand worth of cocaine on a small holding in Midrand in Gauteng. The cocaine was found hidden in a storage room on an identified plot. A 56-year-old man who is believed to be the owner of the plot has been arrested, and the cocaine weighing about 80 kilograms has been seized. As South African Police Service spokesperson Brigadier Atlenda Mate has mourned this.
Police were acting on information that there are drugs being stored at a plot in Blue Hills Midrand. We then obtained a search warrant, and we then pounced on the plot where we found the drugs hidden in a storage room on that particular plot. We can confirm that we have arrested the owner of the plot, a 56-year-old man. He has been arrested, and the cocaine weighing about 80 kilograms, which is worth 20 million, has been seized. He is expected to appear before the Midrand Magistrate Court later on this week on a possible charge of possession of drugs as well as dealing in drugs. According to further investigation, the cocaine was brought into the country from a neighboring country and was destined for the Western Cape.
I just want to step away for a while to get our viewers up to speed with the developing story coming out of Midrand, where cocaine, we're told, worth about 20 million rand has been seized after a drug bust that unfolded earlier today. Lupanga Lamo was part of our team watching that story, and she joins us now live from the plot in Blue Hills. Lupang, what have you been able to gather so far?
Well, Ayanda, very good morning. Well, just to let you know just how secluded this part of Midrand is, we are not yet certain as to the total value of that cocaine that was discovered here. But for more information, we will be speaking to Atlenda Mate, who is the South African Police Service National Spokesperson. For more details, Atlenda, thank you so much for your time. Could you just walk us through what happened here?
A very good morning, and thank you for the opportunity. We've been following up on intelligence driven information for quite some time that on the plot that is behind us, there is some illegal activities that is happening. So what we did, we obtained a search warrant, and after obtaining it, we then arrived at the plot with our crime intelligence unit, also with Gauteng Organized Crime. We also had our K9 unit. So upon arrival, we started searching, and indeed in a storage room we found 80 kg of cocaine, which is worth a street value of 20 million rand. So we can confirm that the owner of the plot has been arrested, a 56-year-old man. He has been arrested, and for now we are looking at possibly charging him with obviously possession of drugs, but also dealing in drugs. So we are investigating the matter further, but preliminary investigations suggest that the drugs were brought into the country from another neighboring country, and they were destined for Cape Town, for Western Cape, but we are still investigating. We can confirm that, however, the owner of the plot is in custody.
Athalinda, just quickly, we saw that in those pictures, it looked like perfume bottles. If you could just clarify that.
So we do see a lot of cocaine being disguised in like your meat boxes. It's not the first time that we see them wrapped in other form of, you know, wrappings. So we have found, you know, cocaine in disguised in meat boxes being shipped into the country. We have those takedown operations and seizures that were made in your KZN. But what we are seeing as well is that a lot of farms, small plots, your small holdings, they are being targeted. They are being used by these syndicates where they would either buy a farm to do these illegal activities where they will manufacture the drugs, or they will then rent the farm from a farm owner to do their illegal activities. We have seen, especially in the Mpumalanga area, where we have made quite a number of major drug busts. I think the recent one was in September, where we dismantled a drug manufacturing lab on a farm worth 350 million rand. And from our investigation in the, on that particular farm, they were manufacturing crystal meth and so on. So in terms of drugs, we are, I think we're doing quite well. We are clamping down on these activities quite well. When you look at the successes, especially in Gauteng, in a 12-month period, we've been able to shut down not less than 10 manufacturing drug laboratories, and most of them on these small holdings, on the plots, and on in the farming area. So we are intensifying our operations in these you know, quiet areas. As you can see, it's quite quiet. No one would suspect that anything is happening, but you will find that you know, when we obtain our search warrants, we then intensify our investigations, we bring in our members, and we find this kind of activities. And as well, this is part of our Safer Festive operations, where we are conducting them. And I think it's going quite well so far. In the past week, through our Safer Festive operations, we have arrested 16,339 suspects. We've also seized 158 illegal firearms. So that does tell you that we're quite ready for the busy festive period, and our members are on the ground to fight crime.
Thank you so much. Athalinda Mate from the South African Police Service. Ayanda.
Meanwhile, the Mamelodi family, or heartbroken Moramanga family, demands for justice.
A first-year beautician, Tiamo Moramaga, a first-year beautician student, and her cousin Baliseng Moramaga, a teacher's assistant, shared a rented room in Mamelodi East, Pretoria. Their cousin, Ntabiseng Buthelezi, described them as happy and harmonious individuals who got along with everyone. The family is relying on social media for information about the incident, as they were not present when the tragic event occurred. However, Buthelezi says they are also waiting for the police to give them reliable information about the death of their cousins.
Whatever they are saying on social media, I won't believe, because we are still waiting for the police. The police are the ones who are going to give us the full name of that person. For now, everything is still on their hands.
Community members in Mamelodi say they are still in shock following a brutal killing of two young bright women in their prime. Local residents say it was heartbreaking waking up to such sad news.
Since from 4:30, I've been hearing this noise. Let's go and see what is happening outside. And then we came out. When we came outside, we saw that people were full around this area, and there were two bodies of two girls lying down on the floor. And those two girls, I know them very well. They used to be my customers, buying from me every time when they come from school.
Civic organizations are demanding increased law enforcement presence in Mamelodi, Pretoria, amid a surge in gender-based violence cases.
We're demanding more from the police. We're in fact demanding more from the Office of the Presidency, because Mamelodi is the notorious township all over South Africa. The killing in Mamelodi is beyond measure. We are asking and pleading with the President that how can they release at least soldiers to come and raid Mamelodi, because where do these kids get illegal firearms?
We're calling for stricter
and more visible policing, particularly in areas such as these, where people are all over,
internal auditors
coming from parties and groove and so on. Police should be more visible. And furthermore, what needs to happen is that there needs to be, a stricter law enforcement after an arrest has been made. For example, the would-be perpetrator or the alleged perpetrator has been arrested, is behind bars. We don't want a situation where now it's going to be easy for him to get bail.
Gauteng police have confirmed the arrest of the suspect accused of killing the cousins.
A 38-year-old man was arrested in connection with two counts of murder and attempted murder that occurred in Mamelodi East Extension 17 on 26 October 2025. The suspect is expected to appear before the Mamelodi Magistrate Court on Wednesday 29 October 2025.
Meanwhile, the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities has welcomed the swift arrest by the police.
Mr. Chikunga commended the South African Police Service for acting swiftly in apprehending the suspect. These heinous acts of violence against women cannot and will not be tolerated. Minister Chikunga called on communities to continue cooperating with law enforcement to ensure that no perpetrators of gender-based violence escapes accountability.
The Moramaha cousins will be laid to rest in Limpopo this weekend. Nontlantla Njingile for SABC News, Pretoria.
Luanda Finance Summit for Africa's Infrastructure.
Of energy the lack of energy infrastructure, road networks, railways, and digital and data infrastructure creates inequalities on the continent. This is according to the African leaders who have converged in Luanda to discuss how best to handle the matter. Addressing the summit, Angolan President and AU Chairperson João Lourenço said young people must take the lead with new innovations to deal with the lack of adequate infrastructure in Africa.
We must identify the best and most effective solution for financing rail port and airport, energy and telecommunication infrastructure, not only to serve each country individually, but above all, so these infrastructure could be shared amongst countries in the context of regional and continental integration.
The AU Commission Chairperson, Mahmoud Ali Youssef, has called on the private sector on the continent to come on board and invest in infrastructure development to address unequal access to basic needs.
A structured mobilization of the African private sector as a central actor of transformation, a coordinated and substantial access to climate financing, notably through the Alliance for Green Infrastructure Africa, which could mobilize more than $500 million in its first phase. Yes, indeed, what we are building here are not roads and bridges. We are building an Africa that is connected, confident, sovereign, capable of asserting itself as a pole of balance and creativity in the world to come.
The AU Development Agency Audi Nepad CEO Nados Bekele Thomas says that the infrastructure crisis is an existential threat to the development of the continent.
The lesson from Dakar is clear. We can no longer treat financing as a fragmented marketplace of scattered deals. We must transform it into a unified strategy where member states strategically fund our development finance institutions, and our development finance institutions in turn channel that capital into priority bankable projects. We must commit to supporting our development finance institutions by giving them the necessary scale and by ensuring that our development finance institutions are granted preferred credit status.
And the three-day summit will wrap up on Thursday, with the outcomes expected to be implemented in line with the AU's vision of 2063, where no one will be left behind. Dita Botsotetsi, SABC News in Luanda, Angola.
African business icon Aliko Dangote is participating in the AfriximBank Legacy Conference in South Africa. Pardon me, he says he might attend.
It's going to be a great event, and hopefully we'll show up down there.
Are you attending?
Most likely, yes. I think so. I'm 90% sure, but I'm not 100% sure.
Lastly, your thoughts about this event that's happening here and your involvement?
It's really a very great event. You know, one of the largest clients of AfriximBank. So I had no choice but to be here. And I think, you know, it's a great event. It is a good transition where Professor Rama is handing over to... Dr. Elombi. You know, I mean, it's a very, very good set, and I believe, the bank will go to the next level.
Celebrations incorporated a farewell to former president of the bank, Professor Benedict Orama, who was hailed for his transformative leadership.
In paying homage to a man who whose legacy is that of integrity, of innovative, progressive leadership, it's about him as an icon in intra-African trade.
Taking over from Orama is Dr. George Elombi, who came in with a promise to change Africa's trade model and create a financing window dedicated to stopping the export of raw commodities on the continent. The bank says the work of enabling trade and finance projects on the continent is urgent.
AfriximBank's mandate is to facilitate intra and extra-African trade. AfriximBank is a multilateral development finance institution that is owned by 54 African states, Caribbean states, some private sector entities, and also international banks.
Meanwhile, the Minister of Information and Media, Permanent Secretary Thabo Kawana of Zambia, has called for enhanced collaboration between internal auditors and legal practitioners to safeguard public resources.
Internal auditors play a key role in ensuring transparency, accountability, and good governance in government institutions. They safeguard public resources, detect fraud, and help mitigate risks. This week, internal auditors from across Zambia have gathered in Savonga for the Zambia Institute of Internal Auditors Annual Conference and Governance Forum. Ministry of Information and Media Permanent Secretary Thabo Kawana officially opened the conference.
We live in an era of rapid change, economic uncertainty, technological disruption, and increasing demands for ethical leadership and responsible management. In this environment, effective governance and the dynamic internal audit function is vital for the sustainable organizational success.
Mr. Kawana also emphasized the need for auditors to protect public resources and restore trust in government institutions.
When we look at today's transactions, procurement fraud remains a serious challenge in both public and private institutions. Addressing it requires collaboration between internal auditors, legal systems, and oversight bodies to protect
This forum is essential for equipping internal auditors with skills to tackle emerging challenges in governance, risk management, and ethics.
Internal auditors there also to give advice to management, to give advice to government, to give advice to institutions. How do we come in? We look at the policies that they put in to see how sustainable, going with the theme, how sustainable these policies they are putting in, how risk resilient they are, how prepared they are to move on. So our responsibility is to collaborate with management. We cannot advise management when we do not know exactly what their dream or what their visions are, what are the strategies they are putting in.
Mkwengu Shapande, reporting for Zanis, in Siyabonga District, Southern Province.
Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu orders military to immediately strike Gaza.
The last hour. Let's turn to the Middle East. Big developments there in the last hour. Israel has carried out what it says are intense strikes on Hamas in response to what it claims were repeated violations of the Gaza ceasefire plan, and what they say was a deliberate deception plot over the remains of a deceased hostage handed over yesterday. Hamas has now said it will postpone a planned handover of another deceased hostage body because of those Israeli strikes. Let's go back to our security correspondent, Frank Gardner, who is in Jerusalem for us. And Frank, tell us a little more about why we've got to this stage, but also do we know any more about where these strikes have actually happened?
No, this has happened very recently, really in the last few minutes, Matthew. So there's been two lots of response from the Israelis. The first response was with artillery, and that was in response to what it says was Hamas firing on their troops east of the yellow line. Now, the yellow line is a kind of roughly north-south line that dividing the Gaza Strip into the 53% of it that is controlled by Israel and its military, and the remaining 47% where Hamas is still the prevailing military power. And Israel saying that its forces were fired on, and this was a violation of the ceasefire deal by Hamas. And in addition to that, we're told that there were airstrikes that were launched, were ordered by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after intense consultations with the Americans in response to what it says was a deliberate deception plot by Hamas. Last night, Hamas was due to hand over another hostage, the remains of another dead hostage. Forensic tests, Israel says, proved that it was actually wasn't a new hostage. This was somebody who had already been recovered, their body had been recovered 2 years ago. In addition to that, an IDF drone secretly filmed Hamas, and we've seen the footage. It does look pretty damning for Hamas. It does appear to show Hamas operatives taking the remains in a shroud out of a building, putting them into a shallow dug grave, covering it up with soil, and then handing it over to Red Cross International Committee, the Red Cross officials, which Israel said was a deception. Now, Hamas has not immediately commented on that.
With that, we've come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Uncle Nana Dengue program brought to you by Luis Shimi.